Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Breaking Western podcast. We are in season three, marketing and media within the Western industry. We have brought on some really amazing guests, and today is no exception. Abby, who are we talking to?
Well, today, we have Hunter Old Elk on the line. We met Hunter a few months back at the Saddle Tramp wedding.
Of the century.
Of the century. out in Wyoming. And we were so inspired by her.
Yeah.
It was one of those times where you meet someone and you walk away and we looked at each other and we're just like, what?
Yeah.
Who is this goddess walking upon the earth?
Pure
She's
light.
Amazing. She is amazing. Yeah. So Hunter is the curator at the Plains Indian Museum, and she's a member of the Crow and Yakima Nations and truly a real force for good in this world. So we are so excited to bring her on today to have some kind of sticky conversations, but conversations that need to be had nonetheless. So without further ado, Hunter, how are ya?
Doing good. How are you ladies doing?
Oh, we're so good. Ooh, we're so good. Oh. We wish you were here.
We do.
I know. I wish I was in Iowa.
Okay, well, let's not get carried away.
Said no one ever.
Let's. I wish we were together. How's
yes.
that?
Yeah. Yes.
It's good to acknowledge that we have the opportunity to share space digitally, to acknowledge the indigenous roots that we occupy in our individual places. And so I'm coming to you from Wyoming, Cody, Wyoming, traditional homelands of the Shoshone and Crow people. And so acknowledging ancestral roots very much is a huge part of our contemporary story.
Yeah, and we're here, I guess we've never said specifically where we are in Iowa, but we're in eastern Iowa, the Quad Cities area, which is the ancestral lands of the Meskwaki and the Sauk primarily, but also we have the Iowa, some Omaha, and a lot of other groups who would move through the region. So thank you for doing that.
I love that you know that. That is just like right off the top of your head.
And now it will be off the top of mine.
But it's so important. I love that you lead with that, because really the space that we occupy in every sense of that word, I think we should always be really mindful of that. And I think the way that we interact within those spaces and the way we hold spaces should be really connected to who is in that place now and who made that place possible for us.
Exactly, and acknowledging that we are just a small part of the larger space that we occupy, and that, you know, Earth will be here before we were here, and it'll be here when it's gone. And that's beautiful to think of, like, how our small story plays a part in those roles. And you know, that's something to lead with the conversation that we're going to have today, which I'm really excited.
Yes.
And tell our listeners, too, about your job, because this is one of the most amazing things
Let's rewind, I think. Hunter, just tell us who you are, what you do, how you got to where you are.
So my name is Hunter Old Elk, and I'm the curatorial assistant for the Plains Indian Museum in Cody, Wyoming. I'm a millennial indigenous curator. There's, you know, few and far of us, but we're there. I am from the Crow and Yakima Nations. So my parents' family, my mom is from the Yakima Valley of Washington, and my father's family is from the Crow tribe of southeastern Montana, where I was born. So I am two indigenous groups. My connection to Western roots really stems from my indigenous background, but also as a fourth generation cattle owner. And so my family has at times and has not been in the horse and cattle business, which is really exciting. It's exciting to have the indigenous roots, but also that part of the Western culture as well.
Right, because they are too, I think often they get all tied up kind of into one package when mm-hmm. people think about, quote unquote, the American West. But really, there's an important distinction there.
There is, yeah. And, you know, acknowledging, like, the singular experiences of those different groups of people. And so a lot of times with the Western culture, and you guys have acknowledged this in other podcasts, is that cowboy can be sort of an outlier of the Western mm-hmm. story and rodeo, but also the indigenous experience is very much in tune with that, and seeing that there is like this vibrancy of cultures in the West, may that be native cultures, may that be natives who ranch, who are cowboys as well, mm-hmm. And these different identities that relay in the West, which is super cool, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so cool.
Big time.
Yeah. And it's not seen enough.
No.
Or talked about or known about. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's kind of this natural connection and of indigenous people with animal. And sometimes that can be sort of whimsical, or it's, you know, in those kind of senses where it's the indigenous person who talks to the animals and they are in some way like connected with nature, but there's also this natural digression from our people who lived on the plains in nature and then transforming into like different cultures. And so naturally it makes sense to me that you had systems of colonization that came through and created, you know, the agrarian agriculture, and then you have these individuals who are beautiful horse people then go into something like the rodeo industry or the cattle industry and thrive in those ways.
Mm. Mm. I love that. Can we talk about that more? Because I think this is something that comes up a lot and then often gets, I don't know, misconstrued and misperceived. You touched on it, this whimsical sense of, like, you know, Indians and animals and like this
is it like a Pocahontas effect that like we all saw a Disney movie mm-hmm. as like little white kids and we grew up with this idea that is so skewed.
Yeah, like talking to animals and the colors of the wind and all of that. When really this is tied really deeply to spirituality, to entire like systems of thought mm-hmm. and like ways of life and the way that like people move throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's very much, it's a lot of it. I mean, we can see the image of cowboy versus Indian, and that's mm-hmm. very much rooted in myth versus reality.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that a Native American image is representative of like free spirit, right? We've all seen like pieces of clothing in the Western world where mm-hmm. it's something like a feather war bonnet, and then there's some script under the bottom that says like live free, die fast, or you know, like live free, die hard, or you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the skulls different. With the headdress on or things like that, where it's like, what are we representing here? Do people know what they're doing?
Like cue your motivational quote and connecting these like very obscure images, and then it's like, wait, no.
No.
Why does it look like they like, why do you have a teepee in the desert? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Right, and it's always very specific. It's typically, it tends to be a lot of that plains imagery that is then applied as almost this blanket statement that people think fits in like a puzzle piece
but
to wherever.
But it's like Southwest, they like that vibe.
It's right,
Southwest imagery that then shows up on clothing that then plays into kind of this entire personality that I think people start to adorn themselves with when they're wearing these kinds of images.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, this perception that I am whimsical and free, and so I end up representing these different personalities, and I've always thought that's so funny as an onlooker.
I can't even imagine.
Like, I'm guilty of it too. And so, you know, the baseline of the conversation is representation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll kind of tell you a little bit of story about how my consciousness has very much changed in terms of being mindful about which brands I choose to wear and what imagery I choose to to adorn myself with, because, and I see this with brands, and I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, which we can edit around.
No, go for it.
Something I see with, you know, not being represented in the larger media or being represented in something like trope and stereotype. So we can thank spaghetti westerns, right? Like the Clint Eastwoods mm-hmm. and the John Waynes of our childhood, to then looking at how those toxic images, although they're entertaining and fun, make this perception that like Indians are wild savagery, and that is something that brands really stick to because it's this carefree notion, not thinking about like the ramifications of representation. And so as a consumer, I've purchased items that have like Thunderbirds from Wrangler or Dreamcatchers from Cowgirl Tough, and thinking I'm being represented in these clothing, but they're cartoons, right? That's character.
Wow.
And I'm seeing myself in character, and I never connected that until I was older, because it was for the first time I thought I saw myself reflected in these. Oh. And you can see how representation is a huge responsibility of brands.
That's heavy to think about. When you were a child, you see it as one way, and when you're an adult, you see the truth of it and what's actually happening.
And so you bring up things like Pocahontas, right? This rad lady that is singing with the trees, and she's befriending the colonizers. And then you stop and think, and that's your representation as, you know, a young girl who's seeing this beautiful brown woman on a cartoon, and then growing old and thinking like, wait, no, she was a child.
Yeah.
Like, that's not okay.
Yes. And so I wonder, this brings us to a good point about the truth underneath a lot of these narratives, because a lot of this is based in some sort of reality, right? But then I think we take those and we run with it, and they've been transformed into something that's almost unrecognizable. So Pocahontas, yeah, she was a preteen when this happened to her. So, and same with like seeing war bonnets, seeing teepees, sure, those are real and those exist, but not in the ways, like you said, that they're being characterized.
Yeah, and so, you know, you make a great point, and a lot of my work is, I work with museum objects, and so our collection is based around Plains Indian objects, and we have international audiences, and so these are people from all over the world that have these preconceived notions about what Indigenous people are supposed to be.
Oh, wow.
But then you also have children, and so these are, you know, tiny, tiny humans that are being educated, and sometimes they don't know any better. And so we often, a lot of our work stems around trying to deal with tropes, things that people have read in history books or their lack of read, things that media has perceived, or like consciously recognizing brands and symbolism, and these attitudes and personalities that and perception that happen, or the vice versa of that, is that then Indigenous people are relics of the past.
Yes.
And so using their images in that way, you know, using a historic image, you don't have to be responsible for those contemporary stories. And so I speak a lot about media responsibility and brand responsibility, because those are the images that you're perpetuating. And so we get visitors in our spaces, or even just conversations in my other types of work, where it's things like, right, I can wear a feather bonnet because I'm honoring your people. Okay, in what way? Not looking at the perception, not looking at, right, like a feather bonnet is a piece of military clothing. Like, you wouldn't wear someone's Purple Heart around. It's the same idea, right? Like, that's so contrary to me.
That is really funny when you bring it up like that. Like, oh, thank you for your honor, sir. Mm-hmm. What?
Awesome.
I'm having images of white women in Pinterest photos with headdresses on
or wearing
rolling across my mind, and I want to throw up right
a
now.
World War II era, like, metal helmet. Like, yes, nobody is, like, putting that on and, like, running around to a music festival. Like, yeah! Why do we do that?
It doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't if you know what it is.
If you know what it is.
Yeah. And so if you become conscious about, you know, those responses, or conscious about imagery, like, I think it, as a buyer and as an influencer, you have a social responsibility. And so that's, you know, a lot of, like, when I was thinking about visiting with you gals is, like, what am I trying to say here? You know, where does the Western world fit in playing on these stereotypes and tropes?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty heavily.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
And they're one of the few industries that are, that is not, and I don't want to say that they haven't been terribly conscious about it, because I've seen in, you know, the last year or two, brands like Wrangler and Ariat being really intentional about making sure that they are being inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You get my favorite brands that are also size inclusive. And so diversity plays a huge part in these conversations. And it's not just in your representation, but it's also in your size inclusion. Mm-hmm. It's also in the attitudes and personalities that the people of your clothing wear. Yeah. And that's been really eye-opening and refreshing to see, is the respect that is being put there. But there's a lot of work that needs to happen.
Mm.
And so a lot of the conversations of 2020 have really stemmed from this fear that there's culture canceling.
Mm-hmm.
is a huge conversation in the Western world, where it's like, well, what do you mean I need to do this or do that? The flip side of it is, in the age of diversity, equity, access, and inclusion in 2020, it's a very relevant subject.
Yeah.
Because performance, what do they call that? They call it,
like, performative allyship.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So let me start over there. So performative allyship is very eye-opening, and I think consumers are seeing this more and more.
Wow.
Where it's like, okay, so as a person of color, I'm looking at your brand as a leader of influence, and if I'm not seeing myself, there's something wrong there.
Yeah.
The flip side of it is, it's super refreshing to then see these alter personalities and these alter people in editorial campaigns and celebrating their connection to the West. It's something that's really important, because those personalities and attitudes have always been here.
So really, it's about making a space that feels inviting and welcoming to everyone, whether that's in the representation via, like, models and branding in that way, all the way down to the imagery and motifs and the styles that are being used within the products that are being marketed.
Absolutely. It is all of those things. And I almost think, you know, as someone who is an onlooker, is that there has to be some, it's marketable as hell, right? Like, if we're going to talk about anything, first and foremost, to promote change, there is ethical change, but then there is also revenue responsibility, or, you know, revenue is a huge part of that. And if you've now opened up a market for all of these different, these people that have been onlookers who are consumers, and then finally seeing themselves, like, that is huge. That is huge for the industry.
Yeah, because really, when you think about it, that's just another way that people are being boxed out and subjugated and being made this other,
really, like, made into a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And
very much
just,
yeah,
like,
very much
cheapened, and all you're good for is your imagery that we thought was cool, so we stole it.
Right.
And that's something that I've always thought too when I was thinking about this idea of brand responsibility, is how commodified the Western world has become.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so we're in this area where fast fashion is very much a part of the
social media
influencer. It's very much a part of the social media, like, influencer attitude anymore, because it's, you know, like, how do I create the next incredible look mm-hmm. from all of these incredible brands?
Mm.
And I'm getting all of these consumer pieces, and we almost lose the authenticity. And I know that can be kind of a buzzword. People mm-hmm. tend to cringe when you say something like that, of small batch, like, handcrafted items. And I think that's where Indigenous people have really kind of bridged the gap between this fast fashion, because you get, like, the whole part of the influencer attitude, and the consumer is like the vintage market of mm-hmm. these, like, one of a kind pieces that people want to put their hands on. And so you see that. But yeah, I think there's a social responsibility in fast fashion as well.
So then I want to circle back as we're talking about this, because I think they're all connected, that when we get into then, like, the boutique world, especially mm-hmm. in the Western industry, boutiques often are all about fast fashion just mm-hmm. by nature. So then what's the responsibility of a boutique, per se, all the way from, like, sourcing these pieces that are mindful and respectful, all the way down to the name of the boutique themselves.
Boutique name.
Boutique
oh my
names
gosh.
Is like something I think we could have a whole episode on that.
Yeah, all boutique names. Yeah. Let's pick a adjective, let's pick a verb, and you don't have to have it in there, but it's super funny to me.
Like, it's so funny. It's like
it's,
a Mad Lib.
And it's kitschy as hell, which I think kitsch plays a huge part in progressing kind of this Western attitude, or I suppose how it's changed, is and that's, you know, always been a part of the attitudes around imagery, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Is kitsch. It plays a huge part of that. But circling back to the fast fashion, I think it's interesting to talk about different responsibilities, and it's difficult, but I think, you know, we can talk about how brands can do better. And yeah. So I've always been in line with brands who have different kinds of cultural consciousness trainings.
Mm.
They're really taking a critical look at cultural appropriation,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Owning up to their potential, you know, or their history, if that is there, and saying, like, yeah, we really did wrong there, and we got to do better.
Yeah.
And so we come into this age of cultural appropriation. And again, it's one of those cringy topics where
mm-hmm.
people mix up the three concepts of cultural appropriation. And so there's cultural appreciation, which is, you know, an example of maybe purchasing directly from an Indigenous person,
mm-hmm.
Including those in your pieces of clothing or in your editorials, so that you are not playing into the mass-produced from China Aztec print,
mm-hmm.
because we don't want to own up to who those belong to or who was the initial inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
There's cultural integration, which is this concept of a person who goes into a culture group and they are like a second or third party. They recognize their privilege, and I'm going to put that out there. I know people cringe at that word too.
No, it has to be said.
But they recognize their position. And then there's cultural appropriation, where mm-hmm. it is the stealing, the direct stealing of concepts, imagery, themes, and so on and so forth. And so we want to be in the place of cultural appreciation,
yeah.
away from the place of cultural appropriation, and then finding ways to integrate, right?
Yes.
because it is beautiful, but it is so important to
recognize the source.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Hunter, can you give us like, I don't want to be like a list, but seriously, when people are just learning about this mm-hmm. stuff, sometimes they have no idea that a teepee was the wrong kind of t-shirt to buy. Do you have right. just like a, just like things action at the top steps. Of your mind yeah. that you're like, if a boutique had a checklist of what not to buy with it on a t-shirt, what would that look like?
So I would be critical of looking at how iconography is reflective of people. Mm. And so, you know, being intentional about maybe not buying something like a feather bonnet or war bonnet that has these live free, you know, the statements that we talked about, and thinking about how those images are so important to Indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this mindfulness attitude. But it's also then also looking at the study of those symbols themselves. Like, why is that so ingrained in Western culture, right? Like the Thunderbird as an image, or the teepee as an image. And seeing if you are playing into myth and reality and trope, because that's a lot of it, is that yeah. people unintentionally don't realize that they are perpetuating those attitudes.
Mm.
And so there's many times that I've had conversations with people who are wearing certain pieces of clothing or images, and they're just unmindful of what it is, for one, who it comes from. And so that is, you know, kind of an interesting part in it. I swing back to this idea of handcrafted authenticity, where you're buying directly from makers.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's...
At the core of that question, it's more about, I think we often see these mass-produced images and symbols that, in the same way that we see these kind of generated names for boutiques, we see this generated set of stock images with the teepees, with the bison as this, like, you know, roam wild and free type of animal. We see
Thunderbird,
the, like, tribal, quote-unquote, tribal prints. Yeah.
Yeah.
Squash blossoms. I mean,
I think we could do a whole episode on that. Hunter educated me a lot at the wedding on
that. Squash, yeah.
And confession to everyone here, I didn't put together the term war bonnet until right now tonight.
Really?
Really. And now I'm rethinking some certain brands that I follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done the same thing many times before, and Abby can attest to this as far as sponsorship goes and et cetera, mm-hmm. that there's a lot of problematic shit out there, and yeah. we're not talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, and there's almost a fear in wanting to bring up the problematic stuff, because again, like, I think depending on who holds autonomy to speak on those, it's, you know, you can be perceived in certain ways. And so
right mm-hmm. right,
you know, me as an Indigenous woman coming into this conversation and saying, yeah, like, the industry is problematic as hell, that might not hold the same pull as, you know, say someone who is not of color mm-hmm. but is also a part of the industry. And, you know, I think we're moving into a yeah. place where people really want to be intentional, and they want to do the right thing and having these hard conversations. Nice. But, you know, images of buffalo war bonnets and teepee sell. And that is the double-edged sword, right?
Yeah. Right.
You can sell myth and reality in those ways. But there's some power in purchasing directly from makers.
Absolutely.
But I think it also stays away from brands cheapening themselves
yeah.
with the commodifying over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And I think the conversation has to start somewhere. And I would yeah. love if today sparks something in everyone who's listening to at least take a moment of pause.
Yeah.
And to consider, and it's totally okay to own up to mistakes we've made in the past. Hunter, yeah. I think you made a great point that this is a confusing or sometimes stressful time, in that we're living in this moment of people begging each other to be aware and to take action and to stand up for each other and to really just defend the basic human rights of every single person, regardless of the perceived color of their skin or mm-hmm. their perceived like origin, nationality, what have you. And so, but then at the same time, we're also inside of this cancel culture where right, if you make a right. mistake, there's not a lot of grace there. And so, I think true. When we're having this conversation today, I think the first step in healing comes from admitting our mistakes, because you can't own up to the past and you can't apologize and begin to make amends unless you recognize where you might have blundered before.
Well, mm-hmm. and you absolutely have to be kind to yourself. Mm-hmm. I think my critique of cancel culture is it doesn't acknowledge growth in any way. And that is a huge issue when we start talking about conversations on inclusion and representation. Is if you are saying you are in the wrong and nobody has ever told you why, or are they not giving you a good enough argument, like conversations aren't had, right?
Right.
Nobody is going to have a constructive conversation to the baseline of like, why might this be a problem? You know, I might be a little, I might be a little less conflicting. How am I trying to phrase that?
Like controversial?
Yeah, I might be a little less controversial and saying like, no, like you should be pissed off every time somebody does something wrong, because you don't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. You do not get anywhere. We don't sit down and have these fundamental conversations about beliefs if we're not creating space for healing. And that is very much a big part of, and I think that's something that gets lost in industries that are consumer industries that commodify over and over again. Because I go back to the statement, those images sell, right?
Well, and that brings up a beautiful point too, is that the moment that we're in can either be seen as a moment of conflict or an opportunity for healing and for growth. And it all depends on how we choose to approach it.
I completely agree.
So then, Hunter, my question for you then is, say there's a boutique owner listening right now who's maybe realizing that something they've been doing is problematic. Where would you recommend they go from here? Like, what's step one in moving forward in a better direction?
So, like, the baseline, I mean, it's hard to ask people to self-reflect, like, in any way, and then to own up to any kind of troublesome behavior or accidents that you have in the past. But I think moving forward is setting an intention, that setting the intention that you want to do better, that you want to represent Indigenous brands who are creating these content, that they are the creators and the makers, and giving space for them. I mean, I think it way strengthens a boutique or a shop owner's I think it strengthens a shop owner's market. I think it strengthens the integrity of shop owners.
Yeah.
It's looking at how, next is also looking at how you're describing some of these pieces.
Ooh.
Right. And so one of my big kind of laughing points, kind of I shake my head, is every time I see something like a beautiful, maybe Southwestern inspired pattern or Native inspired pattern, but they stick something like the word Aztec on there.
Yes.
Because then you don't have to be responsible for the creators of that.
Right. Right. Because so that's, and can you explain that more though? Can you explain that more for people who might not know what you're talking about there?
Sure. And so, we look at how representation and, like, words are power, right? The way that we describe things is super powerful. We bring things into fruition. when we say them, when we write them, when we create them. The same can be said for how you describe patterns or how you describe maybe an item of clothing that you have in your shop that is Aztec pattern. They use the word Aztec pattern because they don't have to give credit to Indigenous persons that might have created that or who inspired those pieces. And so using something like the Aztec people who their ancestors are in Mexico, mm-hmm. like there's no social responsibility to them.
Because Aztec is a historical.
Yeah, because Aztec is a historical description.
Right. It's not like a living culture.
It's kind of, when you use the word Aztec, it's kind of this all encompassing, like, culturally inspired piece. Mm-hmm. It might be Native inspired. It might be African inspired. It might be Mexican American inspired. But Aztec is just this clunked in piece for every pattern that might be geometric.
Mm. Wow. Never thought about that.
So really, it's about being critical and critical, being mindful and intentional. I love that. Sorry, that just got really scary. Something came out from deep inside me.
Say we're gonna spill the tea. I mean, I suppose we might as well do it all for Native
girl. Girl, I didn't even bring paper towels to wipe it up. We're gonna spill it and we're gonna leave it. We're gonna let the table get sticky. Sorry, that was weird. I got really passionate about that.
It's okay. We apologize way too many times in our lives.
Amen.
Word. So then too, I think we touched on something interesting, which is the responsibility of influencers in this entire narrative.
Too. Yes.
When it comes to brand partnerships, mm-hmm. when it comes to certain products, influencers also carry a really important weight on their shoulders.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, next to athletes in the Western world, influencers are next in, like, your marketing responsibility. And so we see a lot of the Western industry now relying on influencers who create editorials for them to create this content. At the same time, you're creating a brand. Mm-hmm. And so I look at people like Tracy Kelly of Little Bees mm-hmm. or Breanne Beasley of Saddle Trap Brand, who are influencers, and what they say and what they do is seen and it's interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
And they're consistently reflecting on if this is okay or not.
Yes.
And that's a place that we want to be, right?
Yes.
That is where we want to be. And so I look at influencers as also artists, and being able to support artists in the attitudes that they are creating, in the content that they are, or in the brands that they are representing, as an extension of those brands, but it's also an extension of their brand. And so if you are representing companies that might be problem-some, or they haven't done the work, it's kind of a reflection on you.
And me as
a third party, like somebody seeing that, I recognize that, but not everybody does.
So
you have to do the work too to be intentional.
Yeah, you need to do your research, right? Like, a product is representative of an entire system, of an entire business, and a group of individuals who think a certain way, who have certain beliefs, who operate in a really specific way in this world. And so you accepting that product, promoting that product in that brand, then promotes those beliefs.
It does. Yeah, it's a reflection. And so, you know, and I think this is the flip side of the cancel culture, is when people get into those sticky situations, they completely cut ties.
Mm.
And so, like, and that can be good and it could be bad. And so, you know, just to think about that a little bit.
Right. Because again, that can be an opportunity to help each other grow.
Yeah.
It can be. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, one of my big critiques of marketing on social media is that it can be a good place for dialogue, but it also can be a really, really bad place for dialogue. People can sit back as, you know, someone on their phone and say, oh, this is problemsome. Oh, why did you do it this way? You're racist and you don't care about blah, 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 blah. But there's no dialogue happening back and forth where it's like, okay, now I have to defend myself because all of my followers have now seen somebody call me a racist. Yeah, you know, I'm just using this as like a, as an example. But they've lost the opportunity to say like, hey, I didn't mean to do this. And that can be really problemsome. And I think social media is also an awesome tool, but I think it can also be a bad tool. And so with my own personal pages, that's something I've always set the intention that I don't want to be a place where people argue. I don't want to be neutral on topics, but I want to present the facts, you know, things along the lines of, I love Western fashion, but I also love advocacy work. You know, at the baseline, I am an arts advocate. And so I want to support what artists are doing, and how they are interpreting the natural world, because we ask them to do that. Right. And so influencers are like that, and artists, but then also relaying important topics in Indian country, you know, things like sexualizing Native women in Western culture is problemsome when our people are dealing with missing and murdered Indigenous women as a crisis. There's very little protections for our women. And so looking at sexualized images directly reflects that.
And I think there's often a disconnect between the images that we so often consume in the Western world that are perpetuated through things like clothing to brand identities to marketing in general. That is a direct link to the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women, that often we're perpetuating that and upholding that system without recognizing it.
Very much so. And I think it's, you know, it's not just a Native problem, but I think it's also a women's problem. And so even in the Western world, I've seen the sexualization of like the character cute cowgirls.
Pin-up cowgirls.
That can be super problemsome. So you juxtapose a sexualized image of a Native woman next to a sexualized image of a cowgirl, and then you're also doing a disservice to the autonomy that women hold.
That is good.
I just feel like we all need to sit with that.
And I will continue to say that we bring into fruition words, we bring into fruition our writing, but also in the images that we represent.
That's so good. That needs to be on a t-shirt.
Yes. And I want to then drive this home at the risk of being provocative and maybe off-putting here, but I hope everyone listening is hearing, as Hunter is saying this, the power that our words hold and the power that even the name of a business holds, the power that your Instagram handle holds, the power that a product name holds or a product description, because these are all, it might seem minute, but they're all connected.
They need
to take a moment.
Yeah, and I, you know, I am a huge supporter of self-reflection, I think, and that's something in the age of 2020, as the industry operates during COVID, you know, things like Cowboy Christmas have changed, people have opted for online markets, is that those are being seen. Hashtags are being seen. And so, you know, I went through earlier and I did NFR, you know, hashtag NFR fashion on Instagram, and you can see a lot of these problemsome images. And I'm not saying, and I will say that they're problemsome. I'm not saying that, okay, if you feel like you are being seen and you have autonomy by wearing something that might be problemsome, then okay, that's cool, you know. I'm never gonna say like don't Maybe I will.
I might tell you not to.
I might not tell you not to, but you know, like, baseline is if it makes you feel beautiful, if it makes you feel good. Mm. What I'm asking you to be is conscious, though. Yeah. And I'm asking you to be incredibly conscious about and having and holding these brands accountable.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, the consumer holds the most autonomy, and we can hold a lot of power in that.
And that's right. The money validation talks to all mm-hmm. of this troublesome stuff is that people are still paying.
People are
for
putting
it.
Their money behind it. Because right. money talks, and where we put our money matters. So mm-hmm. every time you spend a dollar, you're voicing your opinion.
Right. Right.
You are very much, and that's super strong. But in anyways, now we also measure influence by likes. We measure influences by clicks. And so those also hold a lot of autonomy too.
Wow.
I love what you said before, too, Hunter, about supporting Native makers and Native-owned businesses and acknowledging that, because I think cancel culture also applies to our imagery and the clothing we're buying. Like you said, if it makes you feel beautiful, wear it, but maybe look for a different source.
Because it is beautiful. Yeah. It is beautiful.
Yeah, definitely look for a different source. And also look at influencers who are being intentional. And so I can think of Shondina Lee, who is DNA. Yes. And she did a spread with Wrangler. I can think of Shanna Clifford, who is a part of Fashion Posse, and she's Ogallala.
Come on our podcast.
I think she's one of the Sioux tribes. I know she's one of the Sioux tribes. She might be Ogallala. And looking at who they are following, people like Faith Holion, who is also DNA, and she has a huge following, Sammy Jo Bird of Blackfeet Country, and these female influencers who, in their brand and in their everyday clothing, are doing it. They're doing the damn thing.
Yeah.
Freaking cool. And as a Native woman seeing and holding up other Native women, I want them to do well, and I want them to continue to put their power and their autonomy out there.
Yes. And I'm even thinking of all of the amazing Indigenous-owned brands that they represent, like Bee Yellowtail, amazing. So you get, that's clothing. You have hats with, I believe it's Thunder Voice Hat Company. Yep. Incredible.
Oh my gosh, their TikToks are so good.
Yeah, there are so many amazing Indigenous-owned brands out there to support.
And like a ton, you know, the graphic tee, the dressing up the graphic tee has kind of been the big trend of the last couple of years. And different like streetwear brands like NTVS clothing.
Oh, I love that.
They use Native imagery, but it's from Native creators.
Wow. It's super cool.
OXDX, which also does streetwear brands. And, you know, I can tag later on as we post things, and I'll send you these different brands that we can include.
Please.
But,
yeah.
You know, these are Native-owned, Native-created, not Native-inspired, but inspired Natives. And that,
oh,
that is
really shit. That hurt my heart. That was so
because
good.
Because then, Hunter, you bring up another important point is that often in the Western world, we focus on this romanticized yet really narrow period of time to represent Indigenous people kind of across the board. And that's like the 18th century plains. Mm-hmm. And that's all we look at. When really we have an incredible, powerful, inspiring, creative, talented group of contemporary Indigenous people who are putting out bodies of work right now.
Still. Right now.
Right now.
That's totally true. And I think we kind of go into this idea that, okay, so you might not be Native or a person of color. Can I wear this? Absolutely. Like, I think there's this fear in when you're purchasing from these brands that, like, am I going to come off the wrong way? Like, am I appropriating? And it's like, hell no. Like, they created for you to wear that. Like, they want you to represent their brands.
Right.
The flip side of that is also talking about representation in rodeo. And, you know, we can finish on this or we can go somewhere else. You know, Aaron Sinogeny. We've got Derek Begay. We've got Dustin Bird. We've got these different Native athletes who are in the multiple associations, and they're also representing too, and then looking at what they're doing. So I don't know. I think Native people are pretty kick-ass, but...
I feel like you're biased.
Just kidding.
Hunter, you might have gone too far there. Nope, just kidding. That's a big time agree right there.
Yes.
Okay. So here's the deal, everyone. We just got started on these topics.
I'm like, I already know what episode 2 and 3 of this same conversation. Like, we have to have her back. We have to do more of this. This is so good.
And I hope you're all ready, because Angela and I already started loose plans for a season that literally only focuses on these topics.
Yep.
To dive deeper into this, so that we're having a conversation as a group and we're taking a moment to be kind to ourselves and to each other. And to take a moment of pause and to learn together. This isn't us like talking at each other,
right?
Or we're not canceling.
We're not
people.
Like, you all suck. Close your boutiques.
My bitch. No, this is an opportunity that we all have to grow together.
Yeah.
And we really hope you'll stick along.
Stick along. That's definitely the technical term.
Stick with us. For, you know, come along on the ride. I don't know what I'm saying. I got so passionate. I got all
caught
up.
My heart's on
fire. I can't even talk.
Nonetheless, you know, I think it's a great idea to, you know, have a continued conversation and create a dialogue.
Yes.
That is super important. And, you know, this is where we can use the power of social media, in creating these dialogues about these different hard topics. And, you know, I will talk to anybody. I won't argue with anybody. That's something I will not do. But I will absolutely talk to you, and let's learn from each other, and let's hold the industry accountable.
Yes. Because while November might be Native American Heritage Month, this is a conversation we need to be having all the time.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, this is a conversation that more than just Indigenous representation, but, you know, African American representation and Latino representation, and paying respects to those groups who, you know, essentially were our first cowboys.
The people,
the movers and the shakers of the West as well.
Yes.
And giving them space is, we do them a disservice if we're not.
Damn. Oh my gosh.
And that's modeling allyship.
Hunter.
This is why we were so excited. This is it.
Everyone gets it. You get it now, everybody.
Now you know. This is our friend Hunter, and she's amazing.
She's pretty cool.
I would say she's kick-ass.
And
I am biased.
And we are fun, and we're not, you know, we can be white and have some hard conversations, but at the same time, we gotta laugh about things.
She can.
And then there's too many reasons to be miserable, and
so
let's choose
true.
Not to.
Yes. It's so good. Oh my gosh. Okay, Hunter, we obviously could talk to you for hours
forever,
and hours and hours.
Forever.
And we will. We're just gonna split it up into multiple episodes. But we want to know where to find you online, how to support, where you work. Like, tell us all the things. Where can we find you?
Sure. So I'm on Instagram and Facebook. It's at Hunter Old Elk on Instagram and Facebook. And then I also run the social media sites for the Plains Indian Museum. So that is at Plains Indian Museum. And that's also on Facebook and Instagram. And that's where I curate online content based around our museum collections and historic photographs.
Wow.
And y'all are going to want to check that out in a very real way. Hunter has a gift, and she does this so well. So if you're looking to learn, this is a really great space. So go follow all of her accounts that she manages, because she does it beautifully.
Yes. Well, Hunter, thank you so much for being on with us today. We so appreciate you, and we can't wait to continue this conversation, and I can't wait to hear feedback. I hope everyone like tells us about something that they learned from this episode, because it would mean the world to all of us. So thank you guys for listening today to another episode of the Breaking Western Podcast.
Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew. Season 3.
Oh, yes.
There she is.
Yes.
And we will see you all next week.